Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at InternetAdvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Well, grab yourself a lemonade and swing in the hammock or whatever you want to do to get comfortable. We've got quite a program ahead for us here. Hi, I'm Foster Brown. And with me, of course, our tech team, Gary Baker, the Internet Advisor.
Just part of the posse.
Ed Rudell, good to have you here.
Always great, Foster.
And Cal Carson, good to see your smiling face back in the studio again.
Oh, it's been so great being on that world tour where it's 95 plus degrees outside, but inside it's about 36.
Yeah. He works in ice rinks, folks. Just in case you were wondering.
You really should have saw the look on the TSA guy's face when I was going through Atlanta with a heavy winter coat in the middle of the summer. And he goes, like, what are you going to be doing? And I go, I'm going down to Atlanta. He goes, like, could you step to the side?
Oh, no. Get the magic wand out. We're going to see what this guy is hiding in his lining there. And also today, a special monthly visit, of course, from Rick Breida, our gadget guy. Good to have you here, Rick.
Thank you. Always happy to be here.
Oh, and we have got so much to talk about today. As a matter of fact, so much, and we're going to dedicate the entire program to gadgets. It's going to be a great gadget day. You've got some great things, too. Bargains as well.
I got it all. All gadget goodness today.
He is our certified skinflint.
Cheapskate, please.
Cheapskate, yes. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's the trademark. It's the Cheapskate.
That's right.
Because Rick does a blog called the Cheapskate as well.
Yes, I do. Daily
for,
deal.
For CNET, which is a very well-known internet technology company.
Absolutely. And by the way, folks, this is one of those days when it really pays attention. It'll pay you, literally, to go to our Internet Advisor website at InternetAdvisor.net because we have a lot of links to things there already. Guys, let's just, before we get into talking about those, some of those specific gadgets and things like that, some other news items came up this week. First of all, anything hit any of you guys as other than the Google announcements and all the rest, anything slipping under the radar there we might have missed in the news items that you've seen that you thought was, oh, we should talk about that?
You know, I sent you guys some information about Google Glasses.
Yes.
Have you seen that? You know, I thought it was very, very cool. And you've got to go online and look up Google Glasses. But the one that I saw, the very first one, I have to tell you that with all the virtual reality, the heads-up display, you know, I wasn't sure I believed it. I wasn't sure I believed it at all. Because they showed this guy in a YouTube video walking down the street and, you know, mapping here. He went into the bookstore.
Oh, why did you see that one? Oh,
and okay. It said, you know, where do I go to find music and and books on music? And it routed him through the store, right?
To Yes.
The books on music. Yeah. And he picked off a book called Learn to Play the Ukulele in One Day.
Oh, that's right.
And then by the end of the video, he's playing the ukulele.
Yes.
And I went, okay, I believe about Google Glasses. That's easy to understand and believe, but the ukulele in one day? No, I don't believe that at
all.
It
takes at least 2 days to learn a ukulele.
That's what I thought, too.
Well, at you least. Know, the one thing I think of when I saw the Google Glasses, is it going to tell me about the open manhole cover that I might walk into?
Yeah, you kind of hope that it does.
Version 2.
Oh, version 2.
Yeah, hold
by the way, I wish to let you folks know, we have a Facebook page as well, and an Internet Advisor's Facebook page. I posted the article about the Google Glasses and a lot of these other ones that came up, so you know, stop in there every now and then checking it. It's kind of interesting.
Wait till you hear what that's been going through my head since he said that manhole cover thing. Because, like,
I don't know if I dare.
If you remember, Google put
we're
cameras.
We're on live now. Remember this, okay? This is not off the air in between the segments.
That's
I just
right.
want
Go
to
ahead.
Remind
That's okay.
you. Go ahead, Cal.
Don't dampen his creative
effort. I'm going back skating. You know what I'm saying? Google put cameras on cars, and they drove around. They mapped everything.
Yes.
With those glasses, I won't be surprised if they'll start mapping the inside of stores. Just put them on and have people walking around with those on, you know?
Well, that was part of what this it was demonstrated.
That was the demonstration.
It shows you a little path, you know, like on a map quest or one of those other ones, you can get that line that shows you take this route to get here.
And it routed you right through the bookstore to get to exactly where you wanted to go.
It's kind of, but what's kind of spooky about this, too, is you're right, Cal. They went from cars. Remember, then they went to bicycles, the tricycles that went even further. And it was like they get more and more invasive, I guess, in one way, more and more stuff is getting mapped, and it's like, it's a little spooky about
well,
what
you're know, I'm waiting for, now, people. It's not there yet, right?
No.
They can map a store, but they haven't mapped all
but
the
it's potentially.
I'm waiting for store owners and people like that to start banning Google Glasses out of the store. Hey, I don't want my place mapped.
You haven't hit the market yet, and you already want them banned?
I mean, Microsoft brought out a tablet already, and it's not
there's
on the market.
There's just certain places, I hope, when they walk in that they automatically shut off.
Yeah, like,
okay?
where's the restroom?
And exactly.
It doesn't know because it's not allowed in there.
Oh, yeah, see?
You why have would to have... Oh, man, there's all sorts.
Some of us won't go into those stores if we can't get through. You know, it's like me shopping for groceries, right? I want to go exactly where I want to go. I want to get out.
He's on a manhole. Right?
I don't want
cool
to have
part
to
about
be
is
routed
when you,
through the store.
When you fall in that manhole cover, they'll have the camera turned on so they can record you as you're falling.
All the way down.
Great.
And then they can see if you hit terminal velocity before you hit the bottom.
Oh, dear.
Hey. Who knows?
Oh, the potential's here. I tell you, we get this gadget crowd going and got to help us.
You guys don't need me.
No.
Rick, you got to just jump in.
No. I like
crazy
that.
Imaginations going. Hey, I got to say one thing. We should probably maybe hum happy birthday here. This is the iPhone's 5th birthday. And what's kind of interesting about that is to think of, and I was listening to a number of commentaries on it. Did you know that the iPhone alone, that segment of Apple's business, is now worth more than all of Microsoft?
I did not know that.
It was published in the UK. I've got the
based
article
on,
the Daily
based
Mail.
On, based on the revenue, based on the...
Apparently, yes. You'll have then, to see the article.
Okay.
I'll post
right.
it.
That's but cool. It wouldn't surprise me.
It just stunned me that one division of Apple is bigger than all of Microsoft.
Basically because of the price-earnings ratio.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Yes,
so
exactly.
As soon as that changes, which could change overnight,
and it
right?
could, yeah, with new gadgets coming in.
I don't see Microsoft flip-flopping on that.
Microsoft
and
might not
out,
go up
over
overnight, but Apple could go down overnight.
It's just stunning.
That's true.
The huge change. Maybe we can talk about that a little later on, the huge changes that have taken place in mobile computing since the 5 years ago the iPhone came around.
Yeah.
Hey, back in just a minute, we're going to talk about some more tech. Well, folks, one of the developments we had in our program over these 15 years, among other things, is that we got to know a lot of people who are really very good in their fields, and we've now developed a kind of a rotation where every month we've got some very special people coming in, and one of those is Rick Broider, who's with us. And Rick, again, good to have you with us in studio as our gadget guy.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and Rick is going to be talking today in particular about something you've been looking into, which is ways of getting no contract iPhones that you can get into, in other words, this great device, and not have to pay an arm and a leg for it and be tied down to $130, $140 a month in fees.
Right, and this is actually, I think, a pretty exciting development. You know, for my money, my objection to the iPhone for a long time has been the... not the price of the phone. You know, when you buy it with a contract, a 2-year contract, you're getting it for $99, $199.
Right,
it's manageable. Mm-hmm. But then there's that monthly fee.
Oh.
You're talking about a minimum of $60, $70, $80 a month, minimum, just for basic service, phone service and data.
Right.
And that's hard to swallow over, especially if you're locked into it for 2 years. And so, what we're seeing now is that some of the smaller carriers, namely Cricket and Virgin mm-hmm. Mobile, have jumped in to offer no-contract iPhones for a much lower monthly rate.
Now, didn't they say $30 at one place, one of their packages?
Right, as low as $30 a month, I think
wow.
35.
Right.
I think that's Cricket. I think Virgin is 35 at
yeah,
their lower
Yeah, it was 35, 40, and 50, I think, was. The 50 is the really big. But at $50... That's incredible.
Absolutely, it is, and it's unlimited. You know,
yes,
I mean, Virgin
absolutely.
Offers you unlimited texting and data, which is what a lot of people want nowadays. They're not so into the calling. Actually, I mean, they want to use their phones for texting and for apps.
So, how do they do the service plan?
Well, it works like this: when you buy an iPhone from like AT&T or Verizon or whatever, you're paying a subsidized price. That's why they lock you into a two-year contract.
Right.
So the phone itself is subsidized, and that's why you're able to get it for less.
Right.
Now, when you're going to buy one from Cricket or from Virgin Mobile, there is no subsidy, so you're going to have to pay the full list price on the iPhone, which means, and I hope everyone is sitting down, that at a minimum, it's going to cost you about $500 to get the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to pay your $30, $35, $40 a month for service. When you crunch the numbers, over the course of 2 years, if you were paying that same amount of money over 2 years, you actually do end up ahead. You save almost $1,000, depending on kind of the particulars
wow.
of the plan. But, you know, the phone itself, it's a big purchase right up front.
Yeah.
But then you save money over the long haul. And especially if you're able to keep the phone for 3-4 years, then you really start to build up some savings.
And as I'm understanding it, there, of course, the big thing is the iPhone, which has been out of reach for a lot of people on these prepaid plans. I mean, it just doesn't exist on a Verizon or an AT&T. But in addition to that, there are other great phones that they have available, too, for some of the Android phones and things like that, which are pretty big hitters as well.
That's true. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be iPhone. I mean, that's where kind of the big news is, because it's such a surprise that you're able to do this now. But, yeah, if you're into the Android ecosystem, you can actually get a very slick phone for much less upfront and then still get that great monthly rate.
I saw HTC Evo with the Evo 5 with the 4G, you know, for people who are interested in the Android.
Right.
Cal, you're going to say something?
You know, it brings up an interesting point, because Rick mentioned, you know, if you keep a phone 3, 4, or 5 years, how many years have you had your phone, Gary?
4 months.
How long?
My phone? Well, my wife, I can't speak for mine because I get gadgets.
Okay.
My wife, 7 years, same phone.
Wow.
She has a Razr.
Really?
Original battery.
Mine is about a year, a little over a year now.
I'm on a one-year upgrade cycle because, I mean, I write about them for a living.
That's your excuse. That's your excuse.
That's what I tell my wife.
So my excuse is I got to try the latest one. And you know, so we've been on Verizon. I've been trying that. And so now our company is going to go to AT&T service. So I thought, you know what? And I like the difference between Verizon and AT&T for a couple reasons. One is I can't tell you how many times I've been on my Verizon service iPhone. Mm-hmm. And somebody asked me a question, and I can't get to data.
Oh, because you can't multitask.
I can't get to data. I got my headset in my ear,
but
I can look at the phone, but I can't get to the data because I can only do
look,
one
you
or
can't
the other.
Touch.
But with AT&T, I can get to both. So I can look up the weather. I can look up a directions. Mm. I can look at my map if I'm using, you know, my Google Maps to get me somewhere, my GPS. The one thing that that is interesting is that their data plan, at least for business, was $30 for 2 gig of data per month.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a hotspot, up to 5 phones connecting through the hotspot, and you get 5 gig for $50 a month. Now, it's more expensive, right, than what, Rick, you're talking about. The problem that we're looking at is that it might be too fast.
Too fast. Oh,
burns
because
through
of
your data too quickly.
Yeah.
4G, with
4G, phone.
4G.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Because they've come out with 17,000 different upgrades in Michigan over the last year and a half.
In the 4G.
So that 4G is most places where, you know, where there's population. Now, obviously, there are places inside the up in the UP and other places around the thumb, probably in some other areas where low population, where they don't have 4G. But, you know, I could just see my folks burning through that. That
becomes a big consideration. Now, so I would guess that this Virgin offer of unlimited, completely unlimited, is it completely unlimited, or is it like unlimited up to
unlimited with an asterisk?
Yeah.
So you're usually, I think for all of these guys, it's unlimited up to like maybe 2 gigabytes or
two and a half gigabytes
per month, and then they will throttle you back to a quite much slower speed, actually.
Yeah, very, very
like
much
like sub-3G speeds, for sure.
Now, Rick, a big question here would be, and I think maybe in some of the minds of our listeners, Virgin. So what is this, some off-brand? It actually is part of the same system as...
Yeah, well, Virgin is actually owned by Sprint.
Yeah.
And Cricket, I'm not sure if they are a Sprint property as well. A lot of these littler carriers that you hear about are Sprint-owned, and that's why I think Sprint gives them the flexibility to kind of like set their own rates, and you know they're using their network, and they can...
Well, the question then becomes, like, am I getting the full reach? In other words, if I go to one of these prepaid plans, am I going to pay the price that when I'm outside of a major metropolitan area, I don't get a signal, so...
That is an excellent question, and that is something that anybody who is looking to purchase a phone from one of these providers should definitely investigate ahead of time, because I actually have heard from people who are Virgin Mobile customers that even though it's part of Sprint's network, they're not getting quite the same coverage that they get from Sprint. And so when they go into remote areas, they are dealing with roaming issues where they're not getting full coverage or they're not getting coverage at all.
Oh.
So if you live in a major metropolitan area and you spend most of your time there, I think you're probably safe. But it's definitely a question worth asking. I'm glad you brought that up.
Because I think that then in the end, you know, Gary, you travel a lot. I mean, Cal, you're just talking about going to Atlanta. And I know, Ed, you're just going back and forth to your house. You're traveling through a lot of different cell towers. That becomes an issue of, you know, good, I got this big deal, but What's the big deal? By the way, speaking of big deals, you've got a special deal that we got to talk about. One of the little gifts that Rick brings us every day, every time that he comes here, is he's got a special bargain just for us. So let's talk about that before we take our break. The very special deal that you have, the Gadget Guy exclusive. You want to give that?
Let's go. Yes, we were just talking, Gary was just talking about the hotspot feature, which is a nice feature in a phone, but you pay for it.
You do
and,
pay for
it. Hotspot, for those who are not aware, is just basically where you have a device or a phone that basically gives you a portable Wi-Fi hotspot. So, for example, I have an iPad with me that does not have 3G service. In other words, it requires Wi-Fi if I want to get online. Mm-hmm. Well, how can I get online if I don't have a phone that has that hotspot feature? I can get a little device, a little credit card-sized device. Ed's got one sitting here right next to me, as a matter of fact, which is kind of generically called the MiFi.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a MiFi device which through AT&T, through Verizon, and you know most of the big carriers. But again, you end up paying maybe $100 or so for the hardware,
yeah.
And then you're locked into another 2-year contract,
yep.
Just like with the cell phone. And that the service plans can range anywhere from $35 to $55 a month, depending on how much data that you want.
Right, you're also consuming a lot of data.
Right, it gets expensive.
Well.
And so there's
what's the Gadget Guy bargain? I'm dying to know.
How much time do we have? So TrueConnect, the company is called TrueConnect, and that's TRUConnect.com. They offer a MiFi where you buy the hardware and then you pay as you go. In other words, instead of paying a flat rate per month, you pay as you go, and it's literally like pennies per megabyte. So when we come back, we can talk more about the
particulars. Let's do that. I wanted to get that up before we got to the break. Folks, go to internetadvisor.net right now, and there's a hot link to it. There's a special price. We're going to talk about that. It's called TrueConnect MiFi, and that's exclusive here on our Internet Advisor show through our gadget guy, Rick Broida, one of his presents he's brought us. Back in just a little bit to talk about a lot of Google gadgets and that deal. Once again, thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown and the gang in here, and Rick Broida, our gadget guy, with us. And just before we were at the break, Rick told us about his great gadget bargain and something that he brings with him in his little bag every time he comes in here to do our show. It's the Gadget Guy exclusive bargain. So tell me about this exclusive bargain again that's available to people who are listening to our program and catch our podcast quickly.
Right. So we were talking about the TrueConnect MiFi, which is a little bit different take on the MiFi hotspots that you traditionally see out there that lock you into a 2-year contract at a pretty high monthly rate. The TrueConnect MiFi, which normally sells for $99, is this little magical silver device. And basically anywhere you turn it on, suddenly you've got a Wi-Fi hotspot that you can use to connect up to 5 devices. So that's your phone, that's your tablet.
You mentioned the iPad, for instance, if it's on, or a tablet, any tablet that only runs.
Whatever tablet you have that doesn't have its own 3G, 4G service built in, now you've got internet for your laptop, I mean, for anything. And so they're really very handy to have around, especially when you're traveling. And so,
can you connect it to any phone service?
Well, it connects. It actually, I think, is again a Sprint property.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the network that they use. In fact, yes, it does. It uses the nationwide Sprint network, so it's another Sprint offshoot. And so it's very handy to have around. And so the deal I have for you today, I'm actually writing for Monday's Cheapskate deal. You guys are getting a little sneak preview, getting a chance to get it early. Is the TrueConnect normally sells for $99, but you guys can get it for $74, $25 savings.
Nice.
If you use coupon code CNET2012, so it's CNET 2012, when you get to the checkout page on TrueConnect's website.
All right, excellent. By the way, if you go to internetadvisor.net, that information is right there on our homepage, along with the CNET2012 coupon code. So you make sure you take care advantage of that. So, Rick, let's talk about some of the other gadgets that came out this week, because there was a slew of them that came out of Google. We've had Apple with their Worldwide Developers Conference, and then we had Microsoft and their things, and Google got their chance. Gary's already gushed about the glasses. But there was a whole bunch of other things, including a very significant tablet.
Yes, Google jumped into the tablet fray with their own model called the Google Nexus 7, which is a 7-inch Android-powered, of course, tablet that has some pretty impressive specs.
And this is the newest Android operating system, Jelly Bean, right?
That's right. This is Android 4.1, a.k.a. Jelly Bean, which brings some nice new features to the table. And so it's interesting. Gary and I were just starting to mix it up a little bit about this, about their tablet.
Oh,
versus...
really? No, we didn't.
Come on, I can see some mixing going on here. About whether whose new tablet was more of a Me Too kind of a device, the Microsoft Surface, or was the Nexus 7 more of a Me Too? Now, to me, I think that Google's tablet was very much like the Kindle Fire, mm-hmm. with a slightly newer version of the operating system, the same $199 price tag, a little bit more hardware under the hood, but...
Oh, they have a camera, don't they, on it?
And a front-facing camera.
Front-facing camera.
Not rear-facing.
Right.
No memory expansion slot, which I thought was a very surprising oversight on Google's part.
Yeah, I wonder what the trade-off was. If they couldn't fit it in, who knows, right?
I don't know what they
I think the issue is becoming more and more space. Matter of fact, Cal, we may get this, but the new connector they're talking about, the iPhone 5 or 6, what is the new one coming?
The 5.
The 5 is going to be a different 9-pin connector. In other words, I was hearing a long discussion about that even the tiniest little fractions of space now in these phones and tablets are becoming extremely significant. Mm-hmm. So it may very well have been a space consideration.
It may have been on that. That being said, there are plenty of other 7-inch tablets out there that do have that expansion.
Well, the Nook, you brought one in before, wasn't it?
The Nook, the Lenovo IdeaPad, any number of others. Now, granted, there may be, they have this quad-core processor that's in there that may take up more space. They may have an extra large hamster on the wheel in there. I don't know.
I have noticed there is an obsession with people who are, quote, I'm going to say this, non-Apple, that every device has to have that slot on it. It's like...
What slot's that?
For putting a memory card or something into it.
Well,
the big selling points over Apple products.
But yet, they sell a lot of Apple products without
them.
I'm at the limit right now on my phone. I didn't realize that. I put a couple books on it, and suddenly I'm at the top, and I'm being told I can't put apps in and things like that. So, you do run into the situation where you need some expansion.
But what I find out, and I'm just as guilty of it as everybody else, you collect a lot of stuff and never clean it up.
Actually,
I got an app sitting on there I've never used.
I have broomed. I have really vacuumed that thing out, and
I'll give you credit.
I'm still having trouble with it because I want to get things done. So, Rick, do you think that this Nexus tablet is going to be, has it really upped the game? Are we getting people now maybe who say, I do have an alternative to, let's say, an iPad?
No, I don't think that Google brought the fire with this product.
Okay.
I think it'll be a big seller. I think the $199 price tag is great. It's a powerful tablet, and I think the new version of Android is looking very slick. We're going to see something new from Amazon here probably within a month or so.
And Kindle Fire 2
is the rumor, and I will be very interested to see what Amazon rolls out on that front, because they have got so much momentum with that tablet already. That if they can match or exceed what Google has to offer, and there's another Google potential failure here that we could talk about too.
Well, one of the things, by the way, that seems to make a big difference with all these gadgets now is what you're connected to. Because with Amazon, you are in this whole huge Amazon system that makes it very easy. With Apple, you're in the whole Apple atmosphere with you buying things.
Apple Zone.
The Apple Zone, yes.
The Orchard, Apple. I think. Yes.
There you go.
You're close to the core.
Ooh, they're flying. Any case, that's part of whatever device you put out, whatever gadget. Now what's really important is how you're connected to this whole network of things, how easy it is to buy and move around and connect and things like that, social hooks.
Well, and you think about it, and both of them are generated and really controlled by one company, right? When you look at the Kindle...
Both which?
Well, the Amazon Kindle, and if you use the AWZ format, right, the Kindle format or the Amazon format, that's very different than, say, EPUB format, where you can get an ebook, and there are millions of ebooks out there because of your libraries, and everybody else in the world standardizes on ebook.
That's a whole other issue as well.
Right.
So,
is it going to be a situation where Kindle, different than Apple, there are some differences there, but can you really control for very long or very much longer having your own little your own little playpen?
That's a very big
control
point.
By one.
I don't think it's so much controlling your own little playpen as it is assuring a quality product by having a level of control around what you're doing. Yeah. I don't think it's so much that I want my own little space as opposed to I want to create my own space because I want to make sure the quality is good.
Well, in the early Kindles, you couldn't go to your library and download ebooks, which were free. You had to go to the Amazon store and buy them.
Eddie, were you going to say something?
Oh, just a snarky remark.
Go ahead.
It's time. It's time. Go ahead.
I mean, if I was a multi-billion dollar corporation, I'd spew the same stuff. You know, I'd quality. But what it really is money.
Yeah.
You know, and control.
And control. It is.
But he does have a point. It's a great product. And it's stable.
And as long and what I
and that's
I don't
one
want,
of the reasons.
You know, the old Steve Jobs things, it just works. You don't want to have to think about these different formats. I don't want to have to think about it. I want to just be able to put it down on whatever the device is and it works. It just simply works.
Yes.
Rick, I want to get out to something before we miss it because one of the big could be a stinker where something looked like a magic 8-ball that Google came out with.
Right. Yeah, that's the Google Nexus Q, which is, I guess, their stab at doing like the Apple TV or a Roku box.
Right.
And it's this little, it's like a little 2-pound black orb that is designed to connect to your TV or just directly to a pair of speakers if you would just want to use it for audio.
It's got an amp inside of it.
It has an amp inside, which is something that the Apple TV and the Roku box don't have. So it's
also makes it weigh about 2 pounds, like a bocce ball.
Yeah, it's a very odd duck. And, it's tied into the Google Play service. We were talking about ecosystems. But what's interesting about it is that it's by itself, it's useless. You must have an Android smartphone or tablet to control this
or
device.
Or be tied into the Google online cloud
right, atmosphere. But unless you have a controller of sorts, which is your phone or your tablet, you can't even use the thing.
Okay, so you got the Nexus 7 and the Nexus Q. Will they work together?
I'm sure they will work together.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, because they're Android. They're Android devices,
I'm
so they
just,
will.
You know.
Right.
Yeah. No, but that's
I'm thinking of the old Star Trek Q, you know, mentality.
Oh, no, it's Q is for question. Like, okay. My question for Google is, why is this thing priced at $299?
Are you kidding?
It's more than the Android.
I just wrote a post on this, actually, for CNET yesterday or the day before about how many things you can buy for $299. You could buy, like, 5 Roku boxes for the price of one.
With incredible stuff you can get on.
Absolutely. Whereas the Nexus Q is very limited. You're limited to the Google Play ecosystem. You cannot even stream Netflix on it. You can use Google Play and YouTube are all you can do with this thing.
But boy, oh boy, do you have a really cool looking ball with a glowing line that you can sit
it
on
looks
top
like
of
like a true Apple guy.
You know what it looks like?
Yeah,
it looks
spoken like a true Apple fanboy.
When you get all those plugs in the end, the first time I looked at it, I thought, that looks like one of the octopi they threw on the ice at Joe Louis.
This thing's streaming off
the end of it.
I can just see myself making a cannon for this to be shot out of. It actually is a cool looking device.
But it's,
like he says, it's 3 times the cost of an Apple TV. It's 4 to 5 times the cost of a Roku box. I mean, I don't know.
They got a hard sell.
Limited functionality.
Yeah, it looks like they've gone for Google TV and they missed again.
Yeah.
The thing about it is it's built in the USA. It's one of the things they put out.
It's got
good. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Rick has got something else. That's our Internet Advisor takeaway. And you don't want to miss that. I hope you've been enjoying this first hour of our program. We've been kibitzing about gadgets. That's because we have the gadget guy in studio with us, Rick Broida, who is a CNET columnist and also our Internet Advisor official gadget guy. Don't forget, by the way, he's got that gadget guy exclusive bargain this week. You go to our InternetAdvisor.net site, and on the homepage, it's the True Connect MiFi. And instead of being $99, it's $74 if you put in the coupon code CNET2012. And again, that's all on our homepage.
And all you regulars on Rick's Cheapskate blog on CNET, eat your heart out. We got the exclusive on this one.
This is truly exclusive. So if you're listening to us right now, and even if you get the podcast, you'll probably still have time to get this down. But
Rick will write about it in his blog tomorrow.
That's I was going to say, and the deal is good for about a week. So
excellent.
Buy now and save.
There you go. Well, Rick, we've been talking about a lot of gadgets here. One of the things we're trying to do this as a regular thing on our Internet Advisor show is to, and a new little thing is called the Internet Advisor Takeaway. And you've all given us already a lot of stuff to take away this week. But just to keep that process going, at the end of our show, like in the first hour, we try to do something that people can take away for a little or no money. And you came up with a really good suggestion this week, I thought, that it'd be good to pass on to people as well with your great cheapskate nose.
Yes, if we can turn our focus away from gadgets just for 1 second and talk something about software. Let's talk about Office suites, which is something that just about every user still needs nowadays. You need a word processor. You need a spreadsheet. Sometimes you need a presentation manager. And the go-to product for most people is Microsoft Office. It's just a known quantity. It's the market leader and so forth.
And it connects to everybody else that has Office easily.
Yes, that is true. Sure. And it's one of Microsoft's, obviously.
Kind of the common language that's spoken in terms of documents.
Exactly. It definitely is. However, as a consumer, if you're not lucky enough to have your company buy it for you.
Be a student.
Yes, or be a student, in which case you can get a decent discount. You end up paying a pretty hefty price for it.
A lot of money.
Microsoft Office Home and Student Edition, I believe, is $119.
Mm-hmm.
The Professional Edition is $199.
And from there on, it goes up.
And especially, if you're not upgrading, if you're just buying it outright. And you know what? This kind of makes me mad. As a bona fide cheapskate, it makes me mad that Microsoft, to this day, is charging that much money for their Office suite.
They got a monopoly, right? Or
they
at least
do,
pretty
really,
close.
I think they have a mindshare monopoly.
Alternatives out there.
And that's what Rick is about to talk about.
We're going to talk about that because I'm always right. there have been over the years a number of Office-like products that were free or cheap. And I have happened upon one that I find to be a little bit above the rest and that I really like and that I've started using myself. And it is called Kingsoft Office. And if you go on the web address for it is Kingsoft. Let's see if I can pronounce it.
We link to it off our homepage.
Kingsoft Store. KingsoftStore.com. Yep. And so they have a product called Kingsoft Office Suite Free 2012. And although it's a 2012 product, it actually very closely resembles Microsoft Office 2003, which, it's almost a 10-year-old version, but still completely functional and very versatile and good enough for the vast majority of users out there.
It certainly must have a lot of features. It's 36 meg to download.
Which is actually much smaller, than Microsoft Office.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things I like about it is that it's...
But it's still feature-rich.
Feature-packed. And much faster to load. Doesn't take quite as long to load as Microsoft does.
And you get Word, essentially a Word. In other words, you can write a document.
Right.
You can put together a presentation like PowerPoint.
Right.
And then you have another one that's like a spreadsheet.
Right. So you get basically something that's akin to Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. Okay. For $0. And you might be thinking, this must be a kind of a cut-rate product or it's missing some key features and so forth. And I really don't think it misses anything. Like I said, I've been using it. Now, the one thing I will tell you that it's lacking is although it is file compatible with the previous generation of Microsoft Office documents, it is not currently compatible with, I think you can open but not save the Office 2007, 2010 file format.
Where they have the X ending, DOCX, for instance.
DOCX, XLSX.
But if I'm not mistaken, I believe, and Ed could probably help me out on this one, you could probably go to the Microsoft website and download the converter to get you back and forth between X formats and the other format, I believe it's free.
There's any number of ways to do that.
Yeah, there's lots of ways.
It used to be free. I haven't looked lately.
But that's so. In other words, there are lots of different ways to handle it that will give you for you folks out there who don't. Now, if you're in a business setting, entirely different case. Although I see that Kingsoft also has other products in there that will give you more functionality as well.
They definitely do. In fact,
for money, you pay.
But. Right. There's a standard edition that's $50, and there's a pro edition that I think is either $70 or $80. And these are, have a little bit. They have Visual Basic support and things like that really high-end users might
need. You can change things to PDF files, for instance, I saw in some of them. I mean, there's some really nice features. You talk about feature-rich, Gary. Mm-hmm. But for $70.
Right. I mean, even that, you're getting the pro version that is, less than half the price of the pro version of Office. And so I want to mention this. Your takeaway is don't necessarily just buy Microsoft Office by default. Look for some of the free or cheap options that are out there because, you don't have to spend. And I mean, for crying out loud, there's Google Docs, which is free, which lives in your web browser. That's not always convenient for everyone, but, it still gives you word processing and spreadsheets and so forth. Don't pay this ridiculous rates to Microsoft. It's making me mad.
Rick, calm down.
Because
I'm looking over here to my right, and Gary's starting to have a tear.
You're kind of a Microsoft fanboy, aren't you, Gary?
I wouldn't say that necessarily because I'm sitting here with an Apple product right in front of me, right?
No, the Apple product is hardware. We're talking software, sir.
Now, Gary...
Gary
did mention something. In terms of a corporate environment, and in terms of the enterprise, as they say, there's some new things that Microsoft has come out with, this Office 365, am I right?
That's correct.
Yeah, which is actually rather revolutionary in a sense of taking... It takes a big chunk of change out of the equation. But again, that's more in lines of the enterprise. I want to talk about two things, Cal, that have come out of the Apple world that are also takeaways this week. And matter of fact, actually, it touches on something you talked about before, Rick, and that is Google. They have come out with Chrome browser for the iOS platform. And I've been playing with it the last couple of days, and I got to tell you, even though it's a bit hobbled, it doesn't. There are certain things that it doesn't do because it runs on an older Java engine. I won't go any further than that, folks. What I would tell you is if you have an iOS device, an iPhone or an iPad, put it on free and watch how it works. They have got some slick tricks that make this thing look like it's fast. And it's got that wonderful single window that you enter all of your stuff in, your questions, your URLs, you know, the addresses, etc. One thing it doesn't have is it doesn't have the bookmark bar, which for me, that toolbar was, that's where I have all of my, you know, I use Chrome on my Mac all the time, and that's where I have all my fast, you know, connections up there with my bookmarks. But otherwise, I tell you, Cal, it's impressive.
Did you try syncing your bookmarks between the one that's on
it
your Mac?
It syncs
and
everything.
Other one?
It syncs everything. I don't know if I can still get my bookmarks off, but everything else, I have a Google Mail, for instance, so when I sign in with Google once, everything then is suddenly all done. It's all connected with
like
Google Docs and everything else.
Is what it is.
Yes, it is. So, for instance, I have some Google Docs that I've done with a company, American Road Magazine,
right,
that I work with.
My cousin, actually.
Yeah, with full disclosure, his cousin. Yeah. But anyway, I write articles for them and I do a podcast. I can get to those Google Docs instantly. I didn't have to do anything extra. It was there as soon as I signed into Chrome. So that's an app now for the iOS.
I've been playing with it on my iPhone. It seems to be very swift, and I do like the speed that I'm getting off of that sort of thing. It's a paradigm shift to get used to, of course, but because I'm a Safari person, but it seems to have some potential to it. But like you said, it's new. It's got a couple little quirks to it that you kind of have to watch out for, but at least it has not locked up the phone, and that's a good sign.
It appears, by the way, that if you use the Google app, the Google search app on your iPhone or iPad, it will open up in Chrome. Which is kind of interesting. No more are you defaulted into Safari. There's another one out there, by the way, folks, called the Podcast app, and maybe we'll talk about that later on. The neat thing about that, Internet Advisor is right there in the lineup. And that's free. You can download that from the App Store onto your iOS device, your phone, or the iPad. So, Rick, thank you so much for great bargains, great deals, and all sorts of fun stuff that we've had this first hour. Folks, we're going to go step into our second hour, which is the one where we answer your questions. And this is the time for you to call 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. And as soon as you get in there, we'll line you up and we'll start taking your calls. Rick, thanks again. By the way, don't forget, folks, go to internetadvisor.net. You'll find all the information he's been talking about, including his great exclusive bargain just for you. Stay tuned. There's more to come.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. You can find more resources to protect your computer on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Thank you so much for joining us for hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Of course, our posse in studio here, lots of tech help. Our full brain trust is here. We've got Gary Baker and Ed Riddell and Cal Carson. And Cal, by the way, is also fluent in Mac. So if you have a question about an Apple computer, that's or one of those devices, yeah, feel free to give us a call at 800-859-0957. And we got a couple folks lined up already, guys, so I think we'll dive into it just quickly. We have a Mac Minute, and it is close to a Mac Minute with Mr. Eric Anderson talking about all things going on in the Apple orchard.
This week on the Mac Minute, Apple versus Google. Is Google gearing up to compete head-to-head with Apple's Siri? That's what it looks like. Google is working on a new service called Google Now. The service, which will be available in July, allows users to use voice commands to search Google from their Android devices. The service will also act as a personal assistant similar to Siri. However, Google Now will pull up information automatically based on your habits. For example, when driving in the car, Google will automatically pull up traffic information related to your commute. The service is expected to operate in other ways similar to Siri. A street test of Apple Siri was also conducted this week, and the results are in. Siri comprehended what a user said 83% of the time and was 62% accurate. That was when they were standing out in the middle of a street. The test was conducted by analysts at Piper Jaffray. For the Internet Advisor and the MacMinute.net, I'm Eric Anderson, and that's the Mac Minute, give or take a few seconds.
Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson, for coming up with that Mac Minute this week. And lots of things going on, as we said, in the Apple Orchard. But right here in our studios, we're getting lined up with our callers and have a couple of them standing by. So, guys, how about this? How about we dive right into the questions on this beautiful day and see if we can get some help for folks out there. Bill from Wixom, welcome to the Internet Advisor. I understand you're having some problems with a PC installer that won't.
Well, I've got that was the start of my problems. My problems have grown since then.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I was right. So what happened was this. My installer, so I have Windows 7, mm-hmm. and the Windows installer wouldn't come up to install software. So after trying so many different ways, I also then tried to download the latest the service pack, the first service pack, I believe, for Windows 7, mm-hmm. and it only would install about 3 of the 7 different components.
Mm.
And to make a long story short, I tried a lot of different things, and then I thought what I would do is just restart back and reinstall Windows from the start.
Yeah.
So I did that, and now my computer won't start up at all. It goes through the setup, it starts, and then I get a message that says Windows could not complete installation. To install Windows on this computer, restart the installation. I've tried that.
Yeah, I've seen that happen before, guys. I know I had it happen with both XP and I think Vista at other times. Does anybody remember what the solution is essentially to? Because what you want to do is you want to erase the board. Is what Bill's trying to do,
well,
and start from scratch.
Are you trying to reinstall from the manufacturer's DVDs?
I don't think I had. It was on the computer, I believe. It was right from the...
Oh, it's on the partition.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Yes, you've got a newer computer, it sounds like, and what those... A lot of them, they did not ship. However, Ed's mantra always is, build your disks. Right, Ed?
Yeah.
Off the bat, build your disks.
Well, I mean, if it's not installing...
I'm a good example of that.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Let's see if we can help you.
Well, if it's not installing from the manufacturer CDs, I mean, or you know...
The partition.
Or from the restoration partition, I would check for a root kit.
Mm.
That can prohibit and cause problems, because as soon as you rebuild your computer, the root kit, as soon as the window starts coming up, it attempts to reinstall those programs into memory. As soon as the semblance of a Windows operating system becomes available, the rootkit is loaded.
A rootkit is a piece of malware, folks, that lies deep, deep within operating system.
So what's a good tool for getting rid of that rootkit?
I have one on the internetadvisor.net, and you can download it and install it. But see, you're at a point where your Windows isn't even booting now.
Yeah.
So I can't download anything. Yeah. I can't get it to start.
You have to use another computer to download to create the Windows 7 emergency. What is the rescue CD?
Yeah.
And from there you
Windows 7 and what is it? I'm sorry, emergency.
Well, I think it's a rescue CD. I'm going into control panel and on my Windows 7, and then you go into the backup tool. I believe. Let me just look it up.
See, I don't have another Windows 7.
Do you have a friend that has it?
So what you're saying, Eddie, is they would go in. He would go to a friend who has a Windows 7 machine, and create that rescue CD.
Yeah, it's called a system repair disk.
Oh, okay. So you would create the system repair disk for Windows 7 on that machine, and then
who did you buy the computer from?
Oh, geez, I think it was from Best Buy or.
Wait, you're still under warranty, aren't
you? How old is the computer?
2010.
Oh.
You know, I'd go back into Best Buy anyway and say, look, guys, I bought this computer. I'm having this issue right now. Can you guys make me a recovery disk?
There you go.
So let me just assume I can find a friend who's got a Windows 7. So I go... So how do I find the repair disk, the system repair disk?
Well, yeah. You have to go into control panel under backup.
Control panel.
Backup.
Backup. Okay.
And then you create it there, Ed?
Yes.
Okay.
It'll allow you to create it, and then it will then repair the boot sector. It'll format the hard drive.
He takes that disk and then he puts it into his machine and boots.
Correct.
Into it.
I mean, if this was my computer, I wouldn't do that. I would go out and run. Get a Windows PE boot disk that I download off of the internet, and then I'll run that.
But the simplest step, I think, for him maybe this, to get a friend to create it. And what we're going to try to do is we'll come back after the break and try to wrap this up again for you and for other people who are asking this question. Okay? So hang on.
Sure.
We'll be back in just a jiff with more of your calls. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. You just heard that phone number, 800-859-0957. Got some lines open right now. Would love to hear from you. Let's get back to Bill from Wixom. Bill, we just kind of want to wrap this up quickly because we had a number of options that were being offered.
Yep.
You essentially
and
have a
problem. We weren't that clear on it. So
yeah,
let's,
so
let's
we want to clarify it not only for you but for other people who are listening as well, because you have a computer that essentially has gotten so muddled you're trying to reinstall Windows 7. And as happens with a lot of newer computers, the operating system is there. It's on a partition that's protected, and
right.
That's where it's at. So how do you get to that? How do you deal with it? Guys, a couple of solutions we have.
Well, I like Cal's idea of take it back to Best Buy and see what they say. But before I even went that far, and see, I would go to the internetadvisor.net, go to the toolkits that I have there, the link, and in there, there's bootable CDs. And I just confirmed this, that they have a rootkit scanner on the Heron's Boot CD.
That's so, called, it's spelled H-I-R-I-N-S.
No, E-N-S, I think. H-I-R-E-N-S.
Heron's
Boot
yes,
CD.
I'm sorry, you're right. H-I-R-E-N-S. You'll find it at the top of the list that he has under Toolkit
okay.
Bootable CD Tools.
Yep, and what your friend will do, just bring them a blank CD. They'll download this.
I've got another computer, so I can go. Oh,
okay.
I don't have a with 7, but I've got a computer with XP.
Good, good. Sure. Then you just download that from our website, burn it onto the CD. You take that then, Ed.
And pop it into the machine that's having problems.
And then you boot the machine to that, right?
Right, and then it has a rootkit scanner in there, okay? And from that, you let it scan to see if you have a rootkit in there. And it's a simple scan. It only takes a few moments because we want to eliminate that as being a problem. If you have a rootkit on there, a lot of times you have difficulty reinstalling Windows 7
okay.
or any operating system.
Any operating system. So, having done that, then, what's the next step for them?
But after assuming that there is, if there's no rootkit, you know, you might want to try that restoration again. There's usually two options with that. Sometimes they do
right.
a destructive one
right.
and
yes.
a non-destructive
yes,
one.
Yes, that's right. That's what I was thinking of.
Because, and with the Heron's Boot CD, I'm not sure if yours offered that ability. If you do the non-destructive one, it basically wipes out Windows, but it saves all your data. Okay.
So what you want to do, Bill, however, is you want a clean slate. So you want to choose the option that says this is a destructive install. In other words, it will wipe out anything that's there. It writes over it. And
okay.
that way then you have a clean install.
But you're going to lose all your data.
Yeah.
Now, so, I don't know if that's important to you, if you've already backed it up, but you could use the Heron's Boot CD to back up all your data as well.
Yeah. So do you have your data backed up, Bill?
Yeah, pretty much, yes.
Okay, good.
Okay,
well, then I would say go for the clean slate and see if that works for you. Let us know, okay?
Sure, I will. I appreciate your help.
You're welcome, Bill. Thank you. We wanted to take a little more time with that, folks, because it was a little confused, because some people find themselves in that soup and really need some help. Okay, let's get right back on the horse here and say hello to Mary Lou, who's with us from Livonia. How you doing, Mary Lou?
Well, I'm doing really well, but my computer's not, unfortunately.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and I want to just preface this by saying that I'm pretty computer illiterate. So I have a Dell laptop, mm-hmm. and I was Googling some different sites the other night, and up pops a graph basically, and it says Security Shield,
oh.
and it says I have 24 threats, harmful software detected. I have no idea where this came from, and then I have a when I go online, I can't do anything on my
right.
internet. It won't let
right.
me do anything because I talked to somebody at work, and they said I could try downloading like something from Trend Micro
mm-hmm.
or something called mm-hmm. ImmuNet.
There's a whole bunch of good software you can download, but the problem is you can't get to
right. exactly. Yeah. It says warning message. I can't even, let me see if I can get
well,
to what this
is. No, that's okay.
Anyway.
So, the warning message you've gotten to is essentially comes in many different flavors, but it's the same thing.
Do
yeah.
we know for sure it's an actual warning message, or is it scareware?
Right, exactly.
It sounds like scareware because it says you've got 24 of these things in there.
Right. So now what antivirus program do you use currently?
I just have McAfee, and I ran my antivirus. I did a scan. I did a scan mm-hmm. on it, and it said it didn't find anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And by the way, that may be the case because the warning is the malware itself.
And you didn't install it.
No.
You didn't click
no.
on it, right?
No.
See,
and
you are
it
a lot smarter than you give... You're a lot smarter than you give yourself credit for. That's a really good thing. Don't click on that.
There are moments.
You did a good job.
Well, it pops up with this security shield, and it wants me to buy, you know, like a year, 2 years, whatever the term is.
Is it still on there?
I haven't done anything like that, because I don't even know where that's coming from.
Now, Mary Lou, Ed just asked an important question again.
Yeah.
Is it still coming up and telling you that you need to buy something?
Yeah, every time I turn it on, it does that.
Okay, and McAfee's not finding it, and that's one of the problems with that. Yeah. So the first thing I would do when this happens is you perform a system restore, because the longer that's on the computer, pretty soon it's going to start disabling. It'll disable your antivirus if it hasn't already done so. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kills Norton, McAfee, all these antiviruses, and then it disables your system restore. So the first thing that I do when I see this come up is I always perform a system restore. And what operating system were you running? Is it Windows 7?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you want to perform a system restore, and you get by doing start all programs. Mm-hmm. Under accessories, and then system tools, and it should be there underneath system restore. Or if you're lucky, you have Windows 7, so what you can do is just select start, search, and type in system restore.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And that'll take you right to it.
Right to it. And then you want to take your computer back to a date and time that you did not have the infection. That may be a week. It may be 2 weeks.
No, it was just a week ago. Okay. So even last weekend, yeah.
Good.
You want to do that as soon as possible, and then go back a few days before you're infected. It will not affect the data on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
That'll still be there. And this virus will probably be gone. But what it'll allow you to do is then go to the Internet Advisor's website and underneath the toolkit, and you want to download the malware bytes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
I saw those. Thank you very much.
And matter of fact, my instructions for the scareware or the underneath the anti-malware, I think I have a section there. If you look under anti-malware, the first paragraph tells you exactly what I just told you. And then it says to download malware bytes and perform a complete scan.
And
it's free.
Yeah, and it's free. All the tools we put in there are free, and it's precisely for people like you get into the situation. Now, one of the things that Ed said, and we want to put this out to the rest of the folks, especially folks who feel like they're rookies, you know, they're not really familiar with things. As soon as that kind of thing pops up, the big thing that says, you've got 24, whatever, that is itself malware. And what Ed's saying is, as soon as the first time you see that come up, you do the system restore. Right off the bat. And that's not just for you, but for other folks who find themselves in that same situation.
And what's nice about that is you're safe, even if it's your antivirus that's telling you to do that. And it really is your true antivirus doing that and not scareware. You're still safe in going back a day or two.
Right, exactly.
And then downloading malware bytes and then performing a complete scan.
Excellent. All right. I'm sorry, say that again. So I have to do the scan, and then I download the anti-malware.
No, do the system restore.
Yeah.
Right.
And then download the malware bytes.
Right.
You know, download it, install it, run it, and scan.
Now, I would also suggest for you, Mary Lou, how long ago did you buy this machine?
A year and a half.
Well, then, if it's a newer machine, what I would suggest, and it's Windows 7, I strongly recommend that you go to Microsoft and download their Security Essentials program. Because that is, by far, it has been seen to be an excellent tool for protecting, especially with Windows 7, protecting your computers. It's free from Microsoft. It's active, in a sense. It doesn't wait for the bad guys. It's out there looking for them.
Right.
And it's got a good firewall on it, and it's gotten very, very, very good reviews. And McAfee, unfortunately, is not getting good reviews.
And it's not. And this Microsoft's tool will actually stop these scarewares, from what I've heard.
Yep.
Now, that's excellent.
Now, what's going to happen is you'll probably have two antivirus programs running simultaneously. You could do that for a few days, but then over the course of time, it's really going to slow down your computer.
Right.
So once you're satisfied that the Microsoft Security Essentials is running, you can go into your programs and features and uninstall
McAfee.
McAfee.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask one more quick question?
Well, we got to take a break, okay? And if we have a chance, we'll come back on the other side. So I'll put you on hold. But Mary Lou, thank you for being there, and we've got room for your calls as well at 800-859-0957. If you're a rookie or a pro, you got a problem, we'd love to help you solve it. 800-859-0957. Waiting for you. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. By the way, folks, there is a brand new app that's available in the Apple App Store that you can download to your iPhone or iPad if you happen to have those devices. It's called Podcast. Very simply, it's free, And one of the reasons I'm suggesting you do that is the Internet Advisor podcast show up in there like a snap. We have had problems with iTunes before. Some of you have written to us about, I can't get my, the weekly podcast updates. They work perfectly with the new app that's on the iPhone and on the iPad. So it's free. I would suggest you go up there, give it a whirl. There's some bugs in it yet, but we definitely show up in there, which is really nice. That's why I'm kind of pushing that. Let's go back to Mary Lou for a quick follow-up question, Mary Lou, that you had to your problem with your laptop.
Right. Well, this doesn't necessarily have to do with my laptop,
yeah, okay,
other than I wanted to become more computer literate.
Mm.
And what's the best way of doing that? Is it through community education, or what would be the best route?
Ed, you have some thoughts?
Well, it's usually, a computer is nothing more than a tool to get information, a tool to play games, a tool to communicate with others. So you have to tailor your question. Basically, you ask questions, and you get yourself associated with other people that share a similar interest that they're using the computer for. If you're just gathering information and like reading news, I mean, what do you use the computer for yourself?
Not a whole lot, just email, Excel spreadsheets, some Word documents, mm-hmm, internet, just basic stuff.
Have you got any hobbies that you'd be interested in exploring with?
No, not at this point, but really what I'm looking for more is like the behind-the-scenes type things.
Yeah.
How does it work, that type of thing.
Sure.
You might want to investigate in your area the community college that may be in your area. They generally have classes like that beginning with the computer, and it gives you an overview of both the front side with the applications and a little bit of what the back side's going on with. You can also check with continuing education with the local high schools in your area.
Right.
They may also have that type of information for you as well. Worst comes to worst. Get yourself a large cup of coffee and just hang out by an independent computer store and just annoy the guys until they teach you something.
Well, you know what I was going to say? You ask specific questions into YouTube. How does a keyboard work? What is
a CPU?
That's
a very good point.
How does a disk drive work? Or what is a disk drive? And they provide videos on that. Now you have to sometimes go through the pimply faced little teenagers that think they know so much, but a lot of times you get professional college produced stuff by professors.
Oh, that's great. I never thought about that.
Cal, you have one.
And then the last thing is look in your area for any local computer clubs.
Yes.
That's always a great place to learn that
computer
stuff.
Clubs are great, like the Mac group that you belong to for Macs is a great place. The other thing is your library very often has resources. And then you mentioned senior centers.
Yeah, and SEMCOG, which is the, Windows based.
Right. That is,
what was that last part?
SEMCOG is Southeast Michigan Computer Organization. I believe. SEMCO. Yes.
I believe we have a link to SEMCOG on the InternetAdvisor.net website that you could probably
find it. It's not there right now because it's when their meetings come up.
Okay, all right.
But in any case, there are organizations, clubs like that you can get to. Okay, Mary Lou?
Okay, thank you very much.
Good question. That's why we wanted to make sure that we asked that one. I'll let you ask it, rather. Jonathan from Hazel Park, how are things going with you other than having a little bit of a lame XP machine?
Yes. Other than that, things are going well.
Good.
It's a 2002, so I've managed to make it work for a while, but...
Oh, my word. That's 10 years, my friend.
I know.
That's like a century in computer years.
You're not going to like what we're going to say.
It's been going well until the last year, and it just keeps getting slower. I've bought different programs to try and speed it up, like I have PowerSuite and...
Yeah.
ARO with
Jonathan, one of the things I think that happens is that we kind of figure, and because software programs do a great job often of helping to optimize performance, but if you've got a Yugo that's running on four cylinders, after a certain period of time, it's just going to get old and tired. In other words, the internal components really just aren't up to the game. And so you have a hard drive that's been running for 10 years.
Right, you have web pages that take up more memory than you have disk drive space.
Here's the deal. So, if you only do the things with your computer that they did 10 years ago, it will work flawlessly.
That's more, the computer doesn't, the computer's not getting slower, the content's getting richer.
Yes.
Which makes it load slower.
Right.
There's a time where you actually have to do something that's very painful, and that is to dig into your wallet and go buy a new one. And after 10 years, you're trying to do, You're trying to take 10-year-old technology and do today's work. And some things will work, but a lot of things won't.
Right.
It's kind of like trying to put power windows into a Model T. It's just it's going to be very cumbersome. It's not going to work the way you want to. And you'll go out and buy all these little tools that say it's going to speed it up and do this and that. But it's only going to speed it up to the point of what it did 10 years ago. And you're trying to do today's work.
And now the good thing is that you could go to a laptop instead of a desktop, and you could probably spend $350 or so. If you want to stay with the desktop, you could probably do that for a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, you can get refurbished machines, for instance. We've talked about this before.
Yeah, for $120, the Dells that are only 2 years old.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
And
2010.
The difference you will see in speed will amaze you.
Now, Jonathan, do you have, like, pictures and documents and data like that? Have you got that backed up?
Some of it I have on a thumb drive.
Okay. Yeah, one of the things you need to do is make sure your data is safe, your pictures, your documents, whatever you got there. Make sure that's safe, okay?
Especially on that old of a machine because the hard drives, while they don't get slower, they do stop working.
Yeah, literally, physically, they'll stop working because they're a mechanical device.
But the great part about it is that if he goes out and buys a new machine, and Ed can correct me if I'm wrong because this is the Windows side of the fence, and sometimes I'm wrong, file transfer wizard from the with the new machine back to the old machine. He gets all this data off of it, and then he's good to go.
But even before you do that, Jonathan, I would suggest getting your data off just in case
something
happens.
Oh, without a doubt, because you can never back. There's only two types of people out there: those who need to back up and those who wish they backed up.
Now, does any of this, now, Jonathan, as we're talking about this, I'm just curious because we're kind of handing out this like medicine. You know, how does it sound to you? Does it sound like something you can do, you want to do?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I was trying to avoid spending the money.
I understand perfectly. I understand perfectly. Let me tell you what I did once. I picked up on Craigslist, I picked up two Dells that were desktops that were 3-4 years old for $50 a piece. Complete XP machines with the XP operating systems on them, and I gave them to my daughter, and she uses one downstairs for the kids for stuff, and just for surfing on the internet. That's $50 a piece on Craigslist. Okay,
right.
So you don't have to talk about hundreds and hundreds of dollars. There are simpler ways around it, and you can get a little bit older technology, but it still works fine for you.
But see, Jonathan's gotten 10 years of work out of this computer, and 10 years ago he spent whatever amount he spent for it, and what's going to amaze him is that he probably spent somewhere between $500 and $600 for that machine.
That's true.
And now he's going to spend about $350 for a machine that's going to go 5 times, 10 times as fast as the other one. He's gotten his money out of it. And Jonathan, with all due respect, you can only be cheap so long, my friend.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to bite the bullet and go ahead and buy. Well, we're glad Rick Breit isn't here
because he'd tell you that you could be cheap for a lot longer.
I mean, literally, you could have went down to the Detroit Fireworks and picked up enough bottle returns to buy a computer. Really?
So,
two garbage bags full of computer.
What if he says, great, I still want to fix this one? What does he do?
Then you rebuild it from scratch.
Yeah,
you back up all your data, and then you put it back to your original XP manufacturer's CDs, and you patch it. You put antivirus on there. You put your data back on, and you're going to say, "I was hoping it'd be faster."
Yeah, Rick. Even if you decided to reinstall Windows, I can tell you from personal experience, reinstalling Windows XP from scratch is a monster.
Yep.
It'll take you hours.
I spent 6 hours last week doing it for a friend.
Yep. So think of that too, Jonathan, when you think of how, because the guys are right. You can simply reinstall your original. Do you still have those install disks around?
I would have to look for them.
Yeah.
And remember, Jonathan, along with all that is your time, and your time is worth something.
Yeah.
And so if you've got the time to blow to do all that sort of thing, it's a great idea. But I'm going to be honest with you. I think at 10 years, it's really time to consider taking a step upwards. And you don't have to do it today. Maybe it'll take you a month or so to get the funds together to do it. But I think you'll be a happier experience altogether, totally, if you go ahead now and start to upgrade.
So we wanted to run through this, Jonathan, because I got some email a while back kind of criticizing us for just saying, go ahead and buy something. Because, there are people like yourself who don't want to make the investment of the money. You do have an alternative, and that's to install the old program. But I bet you won't find those install disks. and the product code that went with them. And that's the part of the problem. And that's just the beginning of it. As Ed said, he spent 6 hours. I did the same thing with a son-in-law. And it's just grief grinding through that.
And so, do they feed you? No.
So, Jonathan, there's some ideas for you. We'll be back in just a moment. We got Harry from St. Clair Shores and your question at 800-859-0957. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. By the way, thank you very much to the folks behind the glass who make the show happen. Rich Lozinski, Annie Nichols, thank you very much for being here. It's that sweet voice that answers your calls when you call in. And by the way, you know, when Gary and I started this program back 15 years ago, it was part of the weekend show that I was doing, and it was just like the last segment of my final hour. And it's expanded into this 2-hour program that we do on a weekly basis. And now we have all sorts of resources for you. So I really hope that you'll take advantage of them, because the Internet Advisor is much more than just what you hear either live on the air here, or it could be listening on a podcast that you download. It's the Internet Advisor homepage, internetadvisor.net. We also have a Facebook page where we put a lot of stories during the week, and you'll see images of people who are in studio and things like that. So it's a really rich resource that I hope. We have a forum, for instance, that you can go in during the week and put a question in there, and people will visit that and help answer those questions. So I just hope you know that there's a ton of stuff that's out there available for you, that's there for you 24/7, and that you'll take advantage of those things as well.
You know, with all that stuff that's available to them, Foster, we really should start doing Internet Advisor swag, you know, caps and keychains, coffee cups.
Thumb drives. There we go. Logoed thumb drives.
Little pictures of Gary on them.
Oh, by the way, something new that's out right now, Cal, since you're talking from the Apple world, there is a new app, an iOS device. In other words, you can use this on your iPhone and on your iPad. It's called simply Podcast, and it's a great way of downloading our Internet Advisor podcast. So if you already subscribe to podcasts through iTunes, it'll see that. And as soon as you install that app on your phone, your iPhone, or on your iPad, boom, it'll populate that application with all of those. Great resource. And it really solves a lot of problems that a lot of people have been having with it on iTunes in particular.
And what is that app again, Foster?
It's simply called Podcast. So you go to the App Store and look for Podcast, and it downloads it. It used to be what was part of iTunes. It's now been taken out and used as a separate app. Okay, hey, guys, Cal, you had something you wanted to, as a matter of fact, that Mac question had come in that you wanted to tackle before we wrap up with some other questions here.
Yeah, a nice lady named Ann sent in an email, and she had went out and bought herself an iMac, happy to have it, and then she noticed that there's some things different on the iMac from the Windows machine she used to use. I don't understand why, but anyway.
I'm still learning, Ann.
She sent in a bunch of different questions, and one of the questions was, can the icons on the folders be customized with a different image? And yeah, that is correct. You can customize them. I'd love to walk her through the process, but it takes a couple of steps to do. But there is a YouTube video out there that shows you exactly how to do that, and we'll include that link in the response on the email. And then she says, hey, you know that black background in iPhoto? Can I change that to white? And I looked and I said, no, because it's an Apple application. It comes free, and it doesn't have a lot of customization like that in it. However, if she's really into photos and she wants to be able to have a white background instead of a black background, and she's got about $99, she could get something like Adobe Photoshop Elements, and that'll give her the ability to change that background. Or if she wants to spend a little bit more, she can use Adobe Lightroom.
Okay.
Her next question was, how do I arrange the folders so they're in the same order every time I click on it? And I'm looking in a little more investigation on that. I'm going to let that one hang for right now. But the other one that she asked after that was, hey, I got a bunch of movies that were in my Windows Documents folder, but they don't play on my Mac.
Aha.
And that's probably because they're WMV files. However, if she downloads a little application that's absolutely free called Flip 4 Mac, and that's Flip, the number 4, Mac, she downloads that, loads it on her machine, she'll be able to play all those WMV
it's a converter.
Movies.
Yeah,
it converts it and allows it to play.
I think QuickBooks, what am I talking about? The
QuickTime.
QuickTime Pro, I think, can also do that, too.
Yep.
think can also play those as well. But that's pay. You have to buy that.
Yeah.
But the Flip 4 Mac is absolutely free.
And then our last question was, I go to my pictures folder and I want to be able to see the pictures without opening up something like iPhoto to look at it. But I want to look at them as pictures and not click on one open, click on one open. Well, all she has to do is go up to the top of that folder frame and click the cover flow icon, and she can flip through the pictures just like flipping through a book.
The other thing I have found on my Mac is that even if you have like a set of JPEGs, a list of them, if you just click, don't click it to open it, but if you just click on the name, it will show a thumbnail next to it.
Correct.
And you can watch, for instance, I downloaded a bunch of pictures from a friend and there was like string of numbers for all these things. Just click on that string of numbers and right next to it, an image will pop up, a little thumbnail.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, let's go back to our phone lines and say hello to Harvey out there in St. Clair Shores. Harvey, how may we help you with your printing?
Well, I got a problem with my printer. Mm-hmm. It's not printing. It moves through all the motions, but nothing shows up on the paper.
Ah. And what kind of printer is it?
It's a Dell.
Okay. And
it's a printer and copier.
Okay. I've tried
using it both ways, and it just doesn't come up with anything.
When did this start happening?
About 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Can you think of something that happened at that time?
The only thing that I can think of is it said it ran out of paper at the same time. I couldn't see any connection, but it had two or three sheets of paper left in there, so I just filled it in. And
How old is the printer?
4 years, 5 years.
4 years, 5 years old?
And I wanted to confirm that. Have you regularly changed ink, and you know how to do that?
Yes, I have. It showed ink, that there was still ink, but it's getting low, but I wondered if that could be it. I just hated to spend money on an ink cartridge and then find out it's not the problem.
I hear you. There.
Well, you know, one other thing I'd like to ask you. Do you have animals in the house?
Nope.
You might want to
I'm 93 years old and live alone.
Here's the other thing I might want to suggest that you might want to do is you may want to turn your computer off, follow the USB cable from the back of the printer to the back of the computer, unplug both ends, the one on the back of the computer and then the one on the back of the printer, plug them back in together, turn on the printer, and then turn on your computer and boot it back up again, and it should have a little bubble that'll pop up on the bottom saying, you know, USB device detected, that sort of thing, and then see if you can print after that.
Well, I'm a little confused. I thought you said that it actually goes through the motion of printing. So are you saying the computer goes through the motion, or the printer is moving the head around and like it's printing and drawing paper?
Well, it sounds like it's printing.
Oh, it does?
It just sounds like it's printing. But there's nothing comes up on the paper.
Okay, but the paper is actually coming through and stuff.
Right, yeah.
I go with a cartridge. I'd say that cartridge is probably better.
Yeah.
What can happen, Harp, is that the heads on the cartridges actually dry out.
Oh.
So, for instance, if you hadn't used it for a while and it was sitting there and you decided to print something, they kind of get gummed up too. Sometimes the heads actually, they're little tiny, tiny little needle holes, they can get gummed up a bit.
One of the things you could do is just try the old, we used to use lighter fluid in the old days. Yeah. Well, what's wrong with that?
Alcohol.
But now we use alcohol.
Okay.
But it has to be the 99. It's something. You could just use the alcohol, clean off the tip, and then try to put it back
in. Take the
cartridge out.
Yes. And then there's a little face on the bottom of it. It looks like a little grid. And you just take a Q-tip with a little alcohol on that and just swipe along that and see if there's any buildup there.
I wouldn't even use a Q-tip because the cotton or the whatever material. Yeah. So I use a clean rag, you know, old socks.
Okay, good. You know. Okay, something that won't leave lint.
And then before you stick it back in, after you clean it, you're going to use that same sock, keep it on the tip of that cartridge where the ink comes out, and shake it once or twice, and then put it into the machine and see if it'll print.
Okay.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, take a couple cracks at that. 93 years old, good for you, Harvey. Take care of yourself. Have a good weekend. All right, we like to hear that. And thank you very much for the rest of you who have called in here. If you do have any more questions, don't forget that we have a forum at the Internet Advisor at internetadvisor.net. Lots of good information. And don't forget Rick Bright's special exclusive gadget guy deals for you. Save $25, and you alone can get that if you go to our homepage and pick that up. Gary, Ed, Cal, thanks so much for being here in studio.
Always fun. Always fun.
All right, and Annie and Rich, thanks as well behind the glass. And for the rest of you, thank you so much. By the way, don't forget that new app that will allow you to download the podcast to your iOS device. Otherwise, look for us on our podcast within about 24 hours of the show being on the air. Thanks so much for joining us, and stay tuned for more good programming. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.